It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's time for episode 199 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a special interview with four of the creators behind a great independent comic called The Threat. And that includes creators and writers Mark Schmidt and Vince Shooter, artist Jose Fernandez, and colorist William Anderson. We talk about the book and what it's about and how new issues are just about to come out in the next couple of months. We talk about the characters and what makes this book special, so you won't want to miss it. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Right now, I'm talking with the folks who create The Threat, a great independent comic that is out now, and they're in midstream. So why don't I start off with introducing Mark Schmidt, whose name is on the top of the list, so we'll start with you. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself, Wayne?
Doing well. Now, since I am terrible with names, why don't I let you introduce the other three folks that we'll be talking with?
Sure, no problem. We've got Vince Shooter, who is my co-writer on the book and co-creator.
Howdy.
Say hi.
There he goes. Okay.
We've got Jose Fernandez, who is our new artist, starting off with the reboot version of issue one, and we're going to jump over and work on issue five next.
Hello.
And then we've got William Anderson, who has been our colorist since issue two, and he's stuck with us through basically all of the issues and doing several prints and character bio sketches and just all kinds of things William's done with us.
Very good, very good. Well, I like the book that you guys have created, and I covered over you, William. Say hello there, will you?
Hi.
Okay, good, because I want to make sure everybody, when you speak, that people will know who it is that's talking, so it'll be great to do. Now, why don't we go ahead and start out with The Threat and talk a little bit about it, Mark. What's the history behind making this book come to life?
I'm going to kind of let Vince talk a little bit also, but basically Vince and I have been working on the book for a good number of years. We started off with one idea that grew into the book that you've read. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an ever-growing process. Every time we relook at something new, we find something that maybe we want to change just a little slightly. Vince and I just coming up with all the different characters and coming up with the different powers. And Vince.
Yeah, basically, we started off doing your average superhero comic, a run of the mill. We wanted to do something that wasn't like everything that was out there. So we started looking at trying to base it more in speculative science, looking at what's going on today and where we will be in the near future. So we started grounding everything in some kind of natural order. And that helped us bring a structure to the book that was slightly different than what we had originally.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you talk about what the basic premise is about that? What's the idea behind the book? When I was reading it, of course, I understand you've got, well, I don't want to spoil it. You guys can explain it better. Why don't you say what it is that's happening and what it is that goes on? Because you do a lot of time jumping, too, which is, I always like that in a book. I always like something that where we can catch up with the characters and see things from the right perspective. So who's best to answer that? Would that be you, Mark? Would you talk about what the basic premise is, or Vince?
I think both of us a little bit. Yeah. So basically what we've got is it's a near future story, which between now and then, we have several different events that kind of take place. Over the years, through the use of chemicals and the degradation of the environment, the human genome has basically kind of degraded in such a way that it has allowed genetic-based diseases to kind of start overwhelming our bodies and just take over. We start to see in the book that there's a good number of people dying from it, and this causes global warfare. The environment also starts, Vince, you want to kind of help me out here?
Yeah, basically, it's a culmination of multiple things go on and happen at the same time that eventually lead to the breakdown of society and governments. It starts off with what we have now of environmental issues, leads into the constant wars that we have over resources and dwindling food supplies and clean water. Like Mark was talking about, there's a genetic disease that it's basically threatening to make the human race become extinct. And this all happens to a point where the world governments aren't ready for a pandemic like this, and they're already stressed, and this is just the final blow. So then we look at what's going to happen after all of this. This is kind of in our future, but the book's past. And so then we use this as our start off, and then we look at, okay, now where do we want to go? And we looked at what governments that are out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a good concept because we all like to conjecture about what the future is going to be like. And based on what's going on now, we're certain it's not going to be good.
And that's kind of where we lead to in the book with the breakdown of all the governments around the world. Corporations end up having to step in and somebody's got to save us. And they seem the most likely to step up at those points. I don't know if necessarily know if that would be saving us, but definitely stepping up and making sure that they've always got a source of income, I guess is a kind of a good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. So the company that ends up taking over Houston is called Anatech. And that company ends up being run by a gentleman by the name of Michael Swage. The company's a research and development firm, and he's one of the kind of their top guys. And he comes up with a cure or a way to stop the degradation of the human DNA and the human body, which what it ends up doing is it helps resequence and build back up that human genome. Mm-hmm. The problem with it is that there's a side effect that they weren't necessarily prepared for in the beginning, which is to say that in our bodies, we have leftover DNA from the beginning of time, basically, that is human plant DNA and other animals that have just kind of left over from being bitten by mosquitoes or other blood parasites. So that leaves this DNA in our system and what this
and viruses.
Viruses and things of those natures, yeah. And what this cure ends up doing is that ends up combining some of that DNA with the humans and ends up wreaking havoc on the system for a little while. There's a lot of people that just basically die from the change. Then that leads into some people don't necessarily die immediately, but are stricken by these weird malformations that basically they don't live a very good life. They would have almost been better dying off in the beginning. Then come the people that are okay, but don't really have that much change to them. It's like their hair became coarser or their nails grew into more claw-like nails, but they don't really have any extra strength to them or anything. Mm-hmm. We also have people that basically end up just being cured, so the degradation isn't affecting them anymore, but they don't see any change whatsoever. And then you run into the people that we're kind of focusing the book on, and that is, those are called virals. And those are the people who we see the most change to. And instead of just having nails that have grown, they actually show some kind of ability out of that. And one of the best examples of that is our character, Kevin. His ability is to basically grow an armor shell around him, but that shell is basically the human callus, the toughening of our skin that we already have. So it's just a hyperextension of an ability that we're already seeing.
Already exists.
Yeah, already exists. Mm-hmm. So things of that nature, that's where we kind of keep everything based in science.
And like Mark said, with, say, using Kevin as our example again, because he puts on more mass from the callus, he has to put on more muscle mass. So his body can increase his muscle mass exponentially depending on how big he is. He puts on more calluses, the more damage he takes. It's a protective measure. His muscle mass grows to be able to carry that, so he gets an additional strength or heightened strength. Mm-hmm. It's very painful for him. The one thing that we tried to do is for some of these characters is that there's a cost for the use of their power. You know, it just doesn't happen. They can go run around, have fun, and whatever. It's painful for him during the change, and it's painful for him to revert back to a human.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good story. You start off with Kevin, and he ends up rescuing his friend who's falling around him, and kind of instinctively, that happens to him, and he's able to save his friend. And this all takes place, too, in a church, something called the church. Do you want to talk a little about what that is? Because a lot of the story seems to focus on that, too.
Vince?
Yeah, one of the things that we were looking for is what happens in society today for places for people who are different, who are downtrodden, fall in hard times, and that is generally falls to religious institutions. Mm-hmm. So why not carry that over into the future? And we have a gentleman that we call the Reverend. We don't really know what his religious beliefs are, mm-hmm. what the church is. We don't really go into that other than that he really is about taking care of those most in need. Mm-hmm. Well, as we have these young people who lose their parents, in Kevin and Nathan's case, their father helped rebuild the church. So they were already part of it from the beginning. Kevin's father. And he's kind of a Nathan's adopted father, but we'll go into that further on when we develop background stories for the characters more in the books. They've been friends since childhood. Mm-hmm. And then we have Paul, who meets Kevin and Nathan through some, not maybe the greatest circumstance, but they then help bring him there, and he finds his family for the first time. Mm-hmm. And so on. So as these people gather in here, they become this new family. Mm-hmm. And it's a great contrast for the capitalistic kind of environment that exists out there. Everybody lives for the corporation to make sure it exists, and all the subsidiaries of that corporation who also work for the corporation, they're all about one entity, where what they learn at the church is about the group and the individuals watching out for each other. So it's kind of a contrast in the story for us.
Because our society does that. We move back and forth between group dynamics and individuals. You know, what's more important, the group or the individual? So that's a very good premise to go from, because we do that all the time ourselves. So it's very, very cool. I wanted to ask William, too, about the coloring that you're doing, because I like the coloring real well. I thought that you do a good job, particularly when Kevin's abilities manifest themselves. How did you approach doing that? Was that something that did you want to accomplish visually when you did that?
Oh, thanks very much. I'm glad you like the color work. I kind of look at things in the pages, like what kind of feeling do I want to bring out of this certain page, whether it's going to be action, horror. And this one really spoke horror to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm a massive horror fan, so I basically like to mute all the color in a horror scene and get really kind of a different kind of lighting that you would normally see in a typical page. Mm-hmm. So that's why I decided to have the kind of up lighting in a little way, and the almost kind of blue, dingy, completely monotone page, just to try and emphasize the horror going on in Kevin's mind of what's happening to him, and also the blue tone. I also wanted to add in the kind of hint to the colorization of his talus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really good, because I like the choice of the colors. I thought like the blue was a good choice for him.
Yeah, extremely. We originally had him with a cobalt gray mark, and then the blue just really stood out.
Yeah, it's a great choice. So why don't we talk a little bit about the characters, and then we're going to talk to Jose about the art. How did you guys develop the characters, the individuals that you wanted to have in the story, like with Kevin and his friend and Nathan and these other people? Did you base them on people you know, or were these kind of archetypes? How did you decide to use these characters?
Go ahead, Mark.
I think they're a combination, Vince, right? Yeah. They're kind of based on us to a certain extent, and then like the character Paul, who you meet in issue 2, and then Wendy, who you also meet in issue 2. They're kind of based on Vince's kids. And then, of course, they've grown beyond what they were, the concepts that we came up with.
Mark is very much Enigma, in a way. Both Dominic and Evan, the two brothers that make up the character, were very much modeled after Mark, where Nathan and Kevin were both sides of my personality. Mm. So when we were first creating them, they were based off of us. And then as we wrote them, they became actually their own individual characters and had their own voice and spoke to us. So we allowed them to tell us what they would do in a situation. But they were really grounded
in us and friends. Like Givens was kind of based off of a friend of ours who lives in New York, and he had created a character that he had loved very much and was actually trying to get into a comic himself, which is Givens as a very much younger hero and right after getting out of a war and how he would deal with being back in society. And so writing him, we tried to incorporate some of Colin's personality into it. So they are based on people we know.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good way to do it, because David Peterson, who does Mouse Guard, and I had a chance to interview him once. And I asked him, I said, are your characters based on like King Arthur and the Round Table? He says, no, it's me and my friends, he goes. And I went, oh, okay. He says, I know what me and my friends would do. I don't know what King Arthur would do. So he did that kind of thing, too. It's a good idea, because you have a basis of knowledge about the people. You can get an idea as to where they're going to go. And like you said, yeah, when you guys write stories and stuff, they blossom and take on their own personalities, which is really, really cool.
Thank you.
So let's talk to Jose. Jose, you're the newest member of the team here, of the group, and you were working on, you did a reboot of issue number one. What was it like joining the team, and why did you guys reboot number one? And I really like your art, by the way. I just want to say that. But what was the reason why you guys went back and rebooted number one with your art?
Well, thank you, Wayne. The reason why Mark and Vince decided to reboot the art necessarily is the main thing, it was just because they had a different artist for every issue. Mm-hmm. And that was just because, as you know, for as independent creators, sometimes it's difficult to find an artist to keep going on every issue, especially because you can't complete them as fast. But I'm going to basically be, I already signed the contract, so that way we can complete all the way to issue number 8. Mm. And I also plan on going back and completing some of the older ones, because what we really want to do is get a trade going where the art doesn't change.
Right.
Because we do feel that sometimes it can distract the reader a bit, because every artist that has been in every issue does have a very distinctive art style. Mm-hmm. So what Mark and Vince want is kind of have a package that it feels whole, a solid package, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as, and Mark, it back to you, I think you'll probably, you or Vince will know best. If somebody wants to get a hold of your books, what's the best way for them to do that?
There's a few different ways. First, they can go to stratumcomics.com. Mm-hmm. And they can pick up the books through our shopping cart. The books are also available on Comixology. And we are also working to get into retail shops. Mm-hmm. For independents, as you know, that's a little bit more difficult than just emailing them and saying, hey, buy our books. Mm-hmm. But you can also find us at a convention. We do a lot of conventions in Texas. We're going to slowly but surely start branching out into other states. But the website and Comixology are going to be the easiest ways to find them.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about, there's a sequence, because I'm one of a pair of identical twins that really got to me. I think it's in the third book. There's like a joke that starts out at the beginning. And we discover that, you talked a little bit about it before, about that these two people can blend into being one. And when they do, it gives them a different personality, which is an identical twin. I have to say, people look at identical twins and they don't quite understand us. You guys are the same. How does that work? We don't get that. And what's funny is that the two of them could blend into being one person. I got a big kick out of that, because there are a lot of people like to see us do that. Do you guys know a twin? Is that how a pair of twins? How did that happen as far as the comic goes?
The character, actually, if you've ever read the book Dark Half, that's kind of where this character, that's where I got the concept, the
premise.
Yeah, the premise for that character. You know, he starts off as one person, yet this other person takes over that character. And I guess the same thing happens a lot when you're looking at people who have multiple personalities, that very distinctive personality between each person. So that was the way the character originated, being two minds in one body, and then grew from there. It was going to be visually easier to tell the story if we actually had them split into two distinctive people versus having just two people in one body. So that's the way we ended up going with it. But of course, in order for them to be the character that we wanted Enigma to end up being, we had to bring those characters back together. So what we ended up doing was just having this driving force behind them that ended up drawing them to injustice, crime, especially violent type crime. There's a couple of scenes that you'll remember reading, Wayne, that it's just these very, very violent type occurrences. And these two individual characters, Dominic and Evan, are then drawn together and they have to touch. And then that touch merges them into one character, Enigma, and then they go fight whatever that injustice is. Now, the Enigma ends up kind of hanging around for a while after they've merged into one person, just because they've finished that one individual activity that they were originally going after doesn't necessarily mean that Enigma is just going to go away. You know, it might be an overnight thing. It might even be a week before he splits up again. So kind of then at that point, he's the vigilante of the group. He's the one who wants to be in these situations. So he actually starts looking for other criminal activity, and it doesn't necessarily have to be anything big at that point. It could be something just as small as a mugging or somebody grabbing somebody's purse and running off with it, mm-hmm. and he'll do what he can to stop it. Vince, anything to add there?
Well, yeah, I was going to go back and touch on, originally the character was, it was kind of a possession character where there was one individual who then was taken over by a spirit of another family member, and they would gain powers from that. Then we went to the idea we had originally. They were Cain and Abel, of course. They were two brothers who, when they touched, would merge. And then Mark and I, we talked about the Dark Half, and then I had read things about chimeras, which are people who have two sets of DNA in them. And what that would mean if you were to resequence them, how would that happen? You could basically grow two individual people out of those two sets of full DNA. And from that point blossomed the idea of when Dominic gets infected, he would then separate out into his twin brother who, what is the thing called where they're absorbed mark in the womb?
It's basically when you've got a set of twins in the womb and one twin ends up absorbing the physical structure of the other twin in the womb. And this is where you end up getting some of those people who, you know, they've got a nose on the side of their face, or they end up, they're 20 years old and all of a sudden they start having some kind of problem and they end up going to the doctor and having, you know,
a set of teeth or
something removed from them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then having them separate, they have two separate entities. You have Dominic, who was grown and raised, and he's more balanced and into the world. You have Dominic, who is struggling to deal with the fact that a lot of his memories aren't his, and he's trying to figure out who he is. So he's resistant to that touch. So there's that cost again when the powers manifest. He may not want to do this, but he's driven to, and eventually he accepts it, and that's where we see Enigma becoming more and more of his own individual person. There is a struggle, and how we try to handle that is when we're doing the lettering, Mark will use colors around the different bubbles or thought bubbles within Enigma's head to demonstrate whose personality is dominant at that time.
Very cool. Yeah, that was a really good thing. I like that very much. Now, there's another character I wanted to ask about, and that's Marla. She's in the fourth issue.
That was actually Matt Weldon who did that issue.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I like the character. She's really an interesting character because, you know, you've largely got a lot of guys going around. It's nice to see the female character. I have this thing about female characters. I want them to be in there and doing more as time goes along, because every time I go to the comic store now, I'm finding more and more women are going to the comic store. And I just think having a good, strong female character will draw the women clients in to buy this stuff. Do you guys want to talk a little about her character and about what she accomplishes in the series, especially in the fourth issue?
So I do want to iterate that we've seen some concept artwork from Jose, and he's done a fabulous job on all of the characters, including Marla and Wendy, who is another younger female character. No problem, Jose. One of the things that we tried to do while we were writing this comic is that we definitely wanted to make sure that we kept a diverse cast of characters. We wanted to make sure that the characters, that there was a group like you would normally find. I mean, you wouldn't necessarily find in this kind of situation where they're all hiding out in a situation like the church, you wouldn't find characters that were so bigoted that they were separating themselves. Everybody needs help, and those types types of characters end up realizing that the help, it doesn't matter where that help comes from. So in that, you've got a diverse group of characters. So you've got white people, black people, women, men, all different sorts of races and religions and sexual preferences. You just got a mix of people that are all merging into one group. So with that, Marla was, I don't necessarily want to give away how Marla got into the group, but she ends up becoming Nathan's girlfriend and a mother figure to the Wendy character. She's kind of that, I want to say, strong female presence.
Yeah, she's intelligent. The one thing I enjoy about Marla is she doesn't wear skimpy clothes other than a little bit of midriff and belly button show. Mm-hmm. It's her intelligence and drive that makes this character great. One thing I don't care for too much in what's going on in the world is the over-sexualization of women in comics, and that they've got to be busty or scantily clad to be able to accomplish anything. Marla accomplishes quite a bit and keeps her clothes on. Mm-hmm. And I have a daughter. And I have a granddaughter, and I wanted to write a character who I would be proud that they would be willing to read and pick up in a store.
Very cool.
Can I add one more thing about?
Sure, please.
When we were talking about how Mark was talking about races, one of the things that we kind of continue to explore is that the more things change, the more they stay the same. And where in society today, we're more accepting of different races, different sexual connotations and things like that. But we always seem to agree on something new we can hate. And that part is in our story is the virals. It's the people who are different. It's now more fundamental of human versus not human. And we also explore enhanced humans and cyborgs and different things like that, which are in some ways voluntary, where mankind is in a rush to become non-human. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to show that the world has become more acceptant of different things, but yet still show that we have that ability to hate. Mm-hmm. Or to focus in on something that's different. And again, going back to the contrast, is having a group that is so diverse racially, then it helps us show that the juxtaposition of what other people are hating now, which are the people who have mutations or the people who are virals or anybody who just doesn't look like them. It's just a different version of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really good story. I really like the book quite a lot. It's called The Threat. Now, you guys have said that you've got the four issues available now. Number five is in process. Do you have an idea or an estimate as to when number five might show up?
Our goal is to have it out by the end of the year, but it's really going to kind of depend on Jose.
Okay. Jose, yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Right now, I'm actually starting to do the thumbnails and concept work for issue five. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's already on its way. So I'm also starting to work on some artwork for the issue number five. We're going to do a Kickstarter for issue number five.
Okay.
We don't have a set date yet, but that's what I'm working on now to make sure we're going to be ready for that whenever that comes up.
Okay, yeah, because Kickstarter seems to be the great way to make things happen these days. You get a little money to be able to do these things, but you can't really fund it all yourself, which is such a great thing. That and Indiegogo, boy, I love them. I support a lot of projects through there because it's really important to get these things out. I like to say, and some people get tired of me saying it, but I worry about what stories we missed because we didn't have Kickstarter sooner.
Yeah, there must have been some
great, wonderful things out there that we never really got to read because they just didn't have the money to do it. So, okay, so we're looking possibly by the end of the year, maybe early 2016?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good stuff. So we'll look forward to that, and of course we can follow by that. Your website sounds like the place to keep in touch with you. Are you guys on Facebook?
We are. Yes. You can find both Stratum Comics and the Threat Comics series on Facebook. Stratum Comics is also on Twitter.
Okay, very good. It was good talking with all four of you, and you know, much success. Keep going with it, because I really like the book, and I'd like to read more of it. And do you guys have plans on doing something after the eight issues are completed?
I definitely have some plans. I'm working on some other stuff. Vince?
Do you mean within the universe? Because we are also working on other books.
Yeah, that's the thing is, are you going to do stuff within this universe, or do you have other stories you'd like to tell? Yeah, you guys, it's rare when somebody has one story and that's all they want to say.
No, the universe is much larger than what we're showing here, and we want to continue to tell the story of these characters, and as we expand and explore what the rest of the world looks like, we'll introduce new characters. We hope to continue on with the Threat and introduce new stories, and Enigma may go off and become the superhero he's always wanted to be, while other characters might be doing other things. But for right now, the goal is to keep working with the threat as a group and then expanding it as we go. But like Mark said, he's working on different ideas and other stories with other artists. I'm working on different work now. I think my next big project through Stratum will be we're working on a horror anthology, and I'm working on two stories, and Mark's already got two stories ready to go to print on that, so that will probably be the next thing we publish.
Great. Well, Mark, Vince, William, and Jose, you guys are doing a great job. Please keep it up, and we want to see more of the threat.
Do you mind if we also let Jose and William talk about any other projects they're working on?
Sure. Why don't you guys go ahead?
Oh, yes, please.
Go ahead, William.
Well, at the moment, I've not really got any other comic books or anything in the works, but I'm working with ThunderCon up in Thunder Bay, Canada at the moment for their first ever convention. So I'm helping them out with all the program covers and giveaways and things like that. Other than that, I'm just working on my own print line and with some friends coloring their work and hitting the con circuit in Scotland.
Very good, very good. And Jose, you're working on something else too?
At the moment, I'm working with Stratum Comics on the threat, and I am doing stuff on the side like commissions and just anything that, you know, anybody wants to work with me on. I'm also working on pitches and different things like that on the side. But right now, yeah, I'm kind of focusing on the threat right now.
Okay, well, you guys are doing a great job, and, you know, keep it up. And when issue number 5 comes out, you'll have to let me know so I can write a review at Major Spoilers on it, because I'd really like to be able to get the word out about it.
Nice.
So you guys keep it up, do wonderful stuff, and we'll keep our ear to the ground waiting for it. When it's ready, we'll be ready to read it, so please keep it up.
Excellent. Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be back next time when I'll have episode 200, which will have all kinds of special content. But until then, keep reading your comics.